Have you ever wondered what really happened? When anything happens and you ask yourself that question, what really happened? I do that a lot. In a moment, Michael Rivero joins us. He's back. Popular demand, by the way, got flooded with emails when he was on with me just a few weeks ago. And he's back for a full program. We're going to talk about what really happened. With a lot of different cases and stories, next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Michael Rivero, webmaster of whatreallyhappened.com, host of the What Really Happened radio shows on the Republic Broadcasting Network. And Michael's foray into the blogging world began before the word was even invented. Happened almost by accident when he spotted a very strange photograph being broadcast on ABC News that related to the death of the White House Deputy Counsel Vincent Foster. Remember that? 1994. Since that happened, his website has expanded to cover all kinds of topics, including the JFK assassination, many of the subjects we'll talk about tonight. Let's welcome back Michael Rivero. Michael, how are you? Welcome back.
Well, thank you very much for having me back. I was very delighted to get the phone call.
Well, let me tell you something. After you were on with me for just that short moment, the emails came in like crazy. They like you. So you will become a regular here, my friend, as much time as you have available.
It'd be my pleasure.
Michael, let's talk first and foremost about you, how you got involved in this. And tell me about that 1994 incident when you heard about the Vincent Foster story, a story that so many of us heard about, but nobody really went out there. I'm talking about mainstream investigated.
Well, you're absolutely right. It was completely an accident. I did not set out to become a blogger and a peace activist. I was working in the film industry in visual effects. I had a small animation set up in my home, and I was just working one day, and the ABC feed was just coming over the mixer, and all of a sudden I'm hearing out of one ear, they're talking about the death of White House Deputy Counsel Vincent Foster, who committed suicide, and they put up this picture. And I looked at it, and the instant I looked at it, I said, this is all wrong, because that was my business, making realistic-looking fakes for the movie industry. And there were so many problems with the picture. I hit the frame cap, and I printed it out. And, you know, it's just one of those things. You're scratching your head, see something, say something. And I took it in to work with me the next day. I was working at a company that shared the same building as CNN Hollywood. And during lunch, we had this little outdoor cafe, and I was showing this picture to people and saying, there are all these things wrong with it. This looks like a staged shot to me. And I remember very clearly some people from CNN at the next table just listening very intently. And that night started getting threatening phone calls, and my career just absolutely evaporated in Hollywood. And I had no idea what it was I'd stumbled into, but I did a little more digging, and I found the FBI's FD-302 forms, which proved they were manufacturing the testimony of Lisa Foster, trying to claim that she recognized the gun found with her husband's body. As it turned out, the gun with the body was dark blued steel, and the only gun Vincent Foster himself owned was a nickel-plated or silver-colored gun, as described by the FBI agents.
Now, and that story, that story was so bizarre, wasn't it?
It absolutely was, and over time, it looks like Vincent Foster was one of those people who, once he got inside the White House, there's something about that building where all of a sudden you wake up and realize this isn't just fun and games anymore, and it isn't just, you know, Arkansas corruption. I'm in the White House, and this is the entire nation. And I think he developed a moral conscience, and he was having some serious qualms about the Clinton Presidential Blind Trust, which we know from the Whitewater hearings was not complete. The Clintons kept some of their wealth out of the blind trust in order to take advantage of investment opportunities that were being altered by White House decisions. And I think it was 6 months after the inauguration, Vincent Foster was still trying to work on the blind trust documents. The trustee was starting to make noise. Vincent Foster appears to have been ready to resign on the day after his body was found, but of course he was found dead in Fort Marcy Park. 3 days later, the blind trust documents showed up, and life went on as usual for the Clintons. But if you really look at the evidence, it is very obvious it was not a suicide. And this, actually, there was a lawyer in California, Alan Favish, who took this all the way to the Supreme Court, because there were witnesses who said there were two wounds in the body, which sort of mitigates against suicide. And there were photos of the crime scene, and they were being withheld despite Freedom of Information Act requests. And it went all the way to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said, no, you can't look at the pictures. There's no public interest in finding out if Vincent Foster was murdered or not. And in light of some more recent Supreme Court decisions like Obamacare, it's obvious the Supreme Court was trying to protect the inner core of the government from a very damaging scandal.
Let's talk, Michael. Lots of things to go over tonight in the 3 hours you're with me. It is almost as if this world has gone topsy-turvy, hasn't it?
It absolutely is, but something I've discovered over the last almost 20 years of doing this is that a lot of this stuff has been going on all along, and we're going to be talking about the John F. Kennedy assassination later in the show. It's just we, the American people, didn't know about it. We didn't see it. We were very trusting. We were very naive. We accepted what government and corporate media told us about what was going on, and we didn't look much past that little charade. But now, of course, following the lies about Saddam's nuclear weapons, the American people have grown quite skeptical. They look for reasons not to believe the official story, and when they look, they tend to find them.
Michael, let's start with what's going on right now, and then we're going to go back into some incredible stories that have occurred as well. Today, there was a report by a watch group that said, we have killed way more civilians in several drone attacks in Pakistan and Yemen than we have reported. A very sad story. Women, children, innocent civilians. They call them collateral damage. These are the same kind of drones they want to put in the skies over us as well. Is this ever going to stop?
Well, it's going to stop when the government basically ceases to function, which I'm absolutely convinced we're coming up on a major economic crash that will basically bring the U.S. government down, much the way the Soviet Union collapsed from its own internal corruptions and lies, and hopefully without a lot of upset in the streets. But you're absolutely right about the drone strikes. The United Nations has said these are violations of international law to send these armed platforms into other countries. We know that the designated targets are being found in part by the NSA just going through contact lists and looking for 3 degrees of separation. And in many cases, I think it was the Human Rights Watch was saying at least 29 of the designated targets, the people they were trying to kill, turned out to be non-combatants that were innocent of any wrongdoing, and the U.S. just sends in these drones. They'll hit these intended individuals, and they'll get an average of something like 50 innocent bystanders just standing around. Now, I think if you imagine just somebody standing in a market square in their little town, just going about their business, and all of a sudden there's an incredible explosion, and people they've known all their lives are in bloody shreds at their feet. It doesn't matter if it's a suicide bomber with a vest made of dynamite or a drone coming out of the sky. It still feels like an act of terror to them, and I can certainly understand why these people are very angry with the United States.
Oh, there's no question about it, and especially if you were a family member of that dead pregnant woman or that little baby. And this happens, you know, that just it's abominable. I mean, look, I spent 9 years in the Navy. I know what it's like to have a great, strong military and defense, Michael. And at no point should we ever back down on that. But this is going way too far.
I would tend to agree with you. Basically, Obama appears to be using these drones into these other countries much the same way that the Nazis used the V-1 buzz bomb and the V-2 ballistic missile against Britain. They're really just attacks to terrorize the population into pressuring their government to capitulate to U.S. demands. And they don't seem to serve any other legitimate military purpose at all.
No, not at all. Let's get into TWA Flight 800, first and foremost. Happened in 1996. We're going to be bouncing around here. 1996, an episode that, of course, government says was based on an arcing near the fuel in the wing. It blew up. So be it. I've interviewed enough people. I'm sure you have too, Michael. That's not the case.
No, it absolutely is not the case. And you need to remember that in the first couple of days following TWA 800, the U.S. government was saying terrorists had shot it down. Then, of course, it came out that there was an ongoing U.S. Navy exercise right in the area, including live fire. And that's when the story changed to arcing fuel scavenge pump in that center wing tank, and that story never really played. They've tried to back it up with this silly little animation from the CIA. There were thousands of people along the south shore of Long Island who saw that rocket rise up and hit the 747. The official explanation is they were all drunk. It really is an absurd story. And back at the height of the Cold War in the 1950s and 1960s, the American people might have bought it, but this is a sadder but wiser American people, and most people absolutely looked at that and said, we're going to go with the eyewitnesses who claimed they saw a missile take that airplane out. Some elements of the story are absolutely unsupportable, and there's one that I call the magic wing box, which is the idea that the government's official story is the explosion happened in that center wing tank, which is inside a structure called the wing box that holds the wings on the plane. And we know that pieces of that structure were at the very start of the debris field, so there's no question that wing box was destroyed by the initiating event. Then the official story is that somehow magically the wings glued themselves back onto the plane, so it could then zoom thousands of feet up into the sky, trailing burning fuel, and that's what all the people on shore thought was the rising missile. And I think it's worth pointing out that Tom Stalkup, who's just been an absolutely dedicated investigator into this for all these years, recently put out a documentary that included statements by some of the official NTSB investigators into TWA-800. They're now retired. They can't be threatened with loss of their job. And they went public saying they were told to hide certain things from the public. They were told what to say in the conclusion. We caught the FBI and NTSB engaging in fraud in their own scientific reports regarding the red residue that was found all over the cabin. If to any objective observer, this is absolutely, absolutely another case of the government screwing up badly and refusing to take responsibility for it.
I think so, too. And why, you know, if it was the military that did it in a test missile launch, one of the theories, if it was terrorists that did this, one of the theories, why not just come forward and say it? You think because it was going to, it would have shut down air traffic for months?
Well, I think they originally put forward the idea of terrorists because they're still, they even back then, they were selling the terror threat leading on to the war situation. But again, when it came out that there was an ongoing U.S. Navy exercise in the area, they went with the center wing tank because it's certainly not the first time the U.S. Navy has accidentally shot down a passenger jet. But the terrorist idea really never worked because the idea is that terrorists sailed into the middle of this ongoing U.S. Navy exercise of an anti-missile system, fired the exact type of missile the system is supposed to detect and defend against at a 747, then sailed right back out without anybody trying to stop them. And the sheer impossibility of that is why they had to drop the terror story and go with exploding center wing tank.
Michael, we'll never really get the bottom line answer to this, will we?
Well, I think we pretty much have figured out what was going on. It was a horrible, tragic accident. They were testing a brand new system called Aegis CEC, and it was an earlier version of that same system that accidentally shot down that Iranian passenger jet. And certainly looking at the quality of software in the Obamacare website, we've come to understand that despite its high cost, the software that runs some of these weapon systems and government websites really isn't very good.
No, not at all. Now we move over to, of course, one of my favorite subjects, investigating the JFK assassination. Here we are coming up on the 50th anniversary of that tragedy. Things are still sealed. I am so convinced there was conspiracy by a number of groups who wanted him out. How about you?
Well, Kennedy had made a lot of enemies, and again, like Vince Foster, I think John Kennedy got into the Oval Office, and all of a sudden he realized it wasn't just frat boy time anymore. It wasn't just, you know, playing games. All of a sudden, he woke up and realized he was the president of the United States. And I think he decided to do the job the way that he really thought it ought to be done. And he really angered a lot of people. He angered organized crime, who had helped him win the election. Let's be honest about that. By appointing his brother attorney general and then launching him into an attack on organized crime. Kennedy had seriously angered Israel by adamantly refusing to allow them to acquire nuclear weapons. Kennedy had angered the Texas oil billionaires over the oil depletion allowance. And of course, Kennedy had absolutely angered not only the Cuban exiles, but the CIA, because he refused to commit to a full-on invasion of Cuba at the Bay of Pigs. And of course, behind all of that is Executive Order 11110, which Kennedy signed 5 months before he was assassinated, that ordered the U.S. Treasury to put $4.5 billion of United States notes into circulation, yep, backed by the silver in Fort Knox. This was money that was circulating without earning interest for the private Federal Reserve. And 5 months later, he was shot in Dealey Plaza. The United States notes were taken out of circulation and destroyed. And you need to remember, one of the members of the Warren Commission was John J. McCloy, president of the Chase Manhattan Bank, president of the World Bank. And I don't care how good a banker he is, he's not qualified to be on a committee investigating the murder of the president. So obviously he was there to help conceal the financial dimensions to this. And if you go back and you look at America's history, you will find that every president who stood up for a sound money system met with foul play.
They sure did. What would happen, Michael, if they came public and said, we want to announce that President John F. Kennedy was assassinated by internal sources in a conspiracy of several different groups, but we waited until all of them were dead. They're all dead now, and we want you to know that that did indeed happen, and it was a dark moment in our history. Do you think people would accept that?
I don't think they would, and historically they have not. But what tends to happen over time is the news sort of gets leaked out slowly so as not to call attention to itself. And we find out generations later what was really going on. I think a lot of people in power, not all of them, but a lot of people in power do feel a sense of responsibility to historical accuracy. The problem our current administration faces is that each new incoming U.S. government is tasked with carrying forward all the accumulated lies for the last 200 years, and it has become an absolutely monstrous burden for them to try and support. I've often thought that if they were to come out and say, well, yes, we lied to you about all those other things, but we're going to change how we do business and re-earn your trust, that might stop the decay of the nation. But I don't see anybody in Washington, D.C. with the courage to actually do that.
No, I don't either. And like you, it's going to leak out in different, and it already has, hasn't it?
Yes, it has.
Got a lot of people dedicated that want that. But what do you think would have happened back in 1963? If they announced that he was killed by internal sources in this country, would there have been civil unrest? I mean, would people just say, you know, we're done with this government? What would have happened?
I think probably there would have been at least a loss of trust and faith in the government.
Well, which has happened.
Which is happening now. But government actually operates to a large degree just like a religion. It survives on the belief and faith of the general population. And a government that loses the trust of its population is a government that all of a sudden finds itself unable to function. Having studied the Kennedy assassination, it appears to me that the original plan was to frame Cuba for the assassination. That's why we had that Oswald double down in Mexico City trying to get to Cuba through the Cuban embassy there. And that was the reason they planted that Mannlicher Carcano the broken scope on Oswald, because at that time, Castro was importing boatloads of Mannlicher Carcanos to give to the Cuban people just in case the U.S. was going to invade again. But Lyndon Johnson knew of the secret deal that had been made between John F. Kennedy and Khrushchev regarding the Cuban Missile Crisis, and he knew if there was a new U.S. invasion of Cuba, it would mean immediate war with Russia. So Johnson basically pushed the crazed lone nut assassin story for Oswald. Mm-hmm. He bought off the military-industrial complex from an invasion with Cuba by letting them go play in Vietnam, and basically avoided getting into that conflict with Russia.
What wasn't that deal with Khrushchev? Take out the missiles, make me look good, take them out, and we will not. You have my word, you have my assurances, we will not invade Cuba.
That was basically the deal that Kennedy made, and Khrushchev came back and said, if you or your successors do invade Cuba, it will mean immediate nuclear war. And that's why Johnson basically was trying to shift the story and prevent the plotters of the assassination from framing Cuba for the whole thing.
Michael, hold on for a sec. We're coming back much more with you tonight on Coast to Coast AM. Michael Rivera. Welcome back. Michael Rivera with us. Michael, back to the Kennedy assassination. for a moment the talk this week that Robert Kennedy may have had in the brain of his brother. You know, the brain is missing. That's correct. Bizarre. Do you think that that's possible?
Well, you know, obviously we do know the brain is missing. A lot of information about the case is missing. I'm not sure that I buy the idea that Robert Kennedy took it, because I don't really see a motive for him to do so and keep it secret. That's kind of it doesn't really make sense to me. Obviously, there's a motive to take it and keep it secret by those who wanted to conceal the fact that the headshot came from a different direction than the book depository. But why Robert would sign on to that, I really don't know. I think he was planning on using the presidency to reopen the investigation into his brother's assassination, and that's the reason Robert Kennedy himself had to be killed.
Let's talk a little bit, Michael, about the weather. Everybody talks about the weather. In Missouri, they'd say, just wait a minute, it'll change. And it does that quickly.
We say the same thing here in Hawaii. If you don't like the weather, wait 15 minutes.
You had a heck of a storm up there about a month ago, didn't you?
Yeah, we did. And we do get some very spectacular weather. We only have two seasons out here in Hawaii, tourist and hurricane.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And how's the tourist season out there?
Well, our tourism has just been hammered ever since the TSA came along. The Japanese don't seem to find that kind of touching and groping as offensive as a lot of other people, but much of the American tourism is heading to other places like Mexico, where they don't have to go through this. Our local tourism agency is proclaiming that our hotels have an 80% occupancy, but what they're not talking about are all the hotels and tourist venues that have just flat out gone out of business. And it's absolutely devastated the Hawaiian economy.
Wow. That's not good, because that's what they rely on.
Very much so. We've lost much of our agriculture. The high-tech boom kind of fizzled. And there's a lot of, we've got about 4,000 homeless people here on the island of Oahu. A lot of very food-challenged people. My wife and I are involved in a couple of food programs, just trying to get people the minimum amount of food they need to stay alive, because the food stamp money only lasts for 3 weeks out of every month.
Jeez. We'll get back into that. Anyways, worldwide, they're spending billions of dollars every year to try to talk about climate change and global warming.
Mm-hmm.
Where's the political difference here between this? I mean, is there a lot of money to be made to try to convince people that global warming is caused by man?
Well, yeah, there's a tremendous amount of money to be made, because what they're doing is they're taking something that occurs naturally, which is climate change, declaring it to be a crisis, and then offering to sell us all a solution in exchange for our obedience and our carbon tax money and buying and selling carbon credits. And back in the 1990s, when the world was going through a warming trend, they were talking global warming, human-caused global warming, and they specifically targeted carbon dioxide because that could be linked to human activity. But the fact is, carbon dioxide is not the worst greenhouse gas in the atmosphere. In fact, recent NASA research says it actually tends to act more like a coolant. Water vapor is by far the most powerful greenhouse agent in the atmosphere, but you're not going to get people to pay a cloud tax. Then you have methane, which is 10 times as potent as CO2 and greenhouse effects, but most methane comes from deep crust microbes and termites, which are life forms that are far too intelligent to listen to Al Gore. So they settled on carbon dioxide so they could say human activity causes CO2, but human activity only contributes a tiny, tiny fraction of atmospheric carbon dioxide. We have a volcano just off that away that cranks out more CO2 every day than all the cars in America. But it's basically creating the illusion of a crisis and then offering to sell us a solution. We know that Al Gore set up his first carbon exchange with the assistance of Ken Lay of Enron, basically to do to planet Earth with carbon dioxide what Enron had done to California with electricity. And it's just this huge money-making scam. And as Mother Nature has basically done a surprise on them, and we've seen all these really harsh winters, they're trying to rebrand and get away from global warming and say, well, it's climate change. But climate always changes. There's never been a period of time in the 4.5 billion-year history of planet Earth where climate wasn't changing.
It'll continue to change.
Absolutely, long after humans are gone. And climate on Earth is dominated by two factors. First, there's that giant glowing ball of gas up in the sky called the sun, which fluctuates in intensity and energy output. And then, of course, you have the Earth's orbit, which very slowly changes shape from circular to elliptical and back to circular. And when it's elliptical, because of Kepler's laws of orbital motion, the Earth spends more time further away from the sun, and that's where you get the ice ages. Then when the orbit circularizes, you get the interglacials, which is what we're in right now. Solar activity is now at a 100-year low, and it looks like we may be going into a repeat of what is called the Maunder minimum, which was a lowering of solar activity that's associated with the Little Ice Age of Europe.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we've only been able to study the sun scientifically for about 100 years, and we're familiar with the 11-year sunspot cycle and the 22-year magnetic cycle, but we don't know if there are other longer period cycles that are taking place, and Russian scientists are now saying they think they're seeing indications that there is a longer cycle from the Maunder minimum to the present time that is inevitably going to be making dramatic changes to climate here on Earth. So until Al Gore and his carbon Nazis can control solar output or shift the Earth in its orbit, it doesn't matter how much money they take, they're not going to be able to stop climate change.
And I think, Michael, a lot of people who are on the side of man-made climate change are probably confusing it, not everybody, but probably confusing it with fighting pollution, because nobody wants pollution. But I think a lot of the people who are against that, against, you know, man polluting the atmosphere, and he does, that they think that that also is affecting the climate, and that's not necessarily the case. We may be contributing some of it, but it's a cyclo. It's going to happen. It will happen. It has happened. But the big question is, how do you convince those people who don't look at the pollution end of it, which I think is a big cause of the argument? I mean, people just, I think, for example, California has done a great job in cleaning up the smog that they had 15 years ago. A great job. And I think they could do a better job. But that's not climate change. So how do you get people to understand the difference?
Well, first of all, I absolutely agree with you. We need to be very careful about pollution. We need to protect what is left of nature, except that, of course, we're all part of nature. You're part of nature. That microphone you're using is part of nature. And all life forms do affect their immediate environment to some extent, and that, too, is also part of nature. The idea of controlling pollution, obviously we need to be looking at that, but we also need to remember that a lot of people who are out there talking about protecting the Earth and protecting nature are doing so from financial motives. And we have this U.S. government that is out there talking about a new carbon tax because it doesn't look like they're going to get the tax windfall from Obamacare that they were hoping for. So where John McCain is already back out there saying we got to have a carbon tax, and yet this is the same government that absolutely turns a blind eye to the fracking problem, which is, it's a one-way street. Once those toxic chemicals are down there in our drinking water, there is no way to get them back out. And so there's this weird double standard and hypocrisy where they're talking about this tiny fraction of CO2 humans are putting out there is a major problem, but all these toxic chemicals going into the groundwater are not. And it underscores the fact that a lot of people are proclaiming their love of nature and the environment, but they're doing so basically as a sales pitch to make themselves a profit.
They sure are. So with these cycles that change, when do people who are believing in man-made climate change, when do they say, oh, my God, we're having blizzards. It's cold. This could be a mini ice age. Will they ever see that?
No, it's kind of amazing to hear some of the explanations and pseudoscientific gobbledygook that's been coming out from the global warming people. Look at all these agencies, universities, scientists who literally bet their reputations on global warming, and now we're getting all these blizzards. 10 years ago, the headlines were proclaiming snow is a thing of the past. Now they're trying to claim that global warming is causing the blizzards. They were trying to claim that the world is getting warmer, but the heat was hiding at the bottom of the ocean, which if you understand physics and convection currents, that obviously is not going to happen. But the raw data continues to argue against it, but they've invested a huge amount of money selling this danger, this illusion of a threat to the people, and now before they can sort of harvest their financial gain from it, like we just had that huge monster snowstorm in South Dakota that killed thousands and thousands of cattle.
Huge. I mean, like an instant frost. It was almost like the woolly mammoths all over again.
They got about, in a space of 4 days, they got as much snow as they normally get for the entire month of October.
They said 100,000 head of cattle.
Yeah, that was one of the numbers I heard as well. And normally, if you know the storm is coming, there are things you can do to protect your cattle. You can barn them. You can put them in areas with windbreaks. You can move them to lower pasture lands. But these poor cattle ranchers in South Dakota, they got caught completely off guard. We're seeing that sort of thing happening all over the world, where these hard winters come in and local communities, because they were buying into this global warming, snow's a thing of the past, they're not stocked up on road grit. They haven't maintained the snow plows. And all of a sudden, they're not only just in the same winters they were in before, they're less able to deal with them because they're taking the money saying, oh, we don't have to maintain the snow plows, let's go buy something else.
You know, and these farmers, these cattle ranchers, they're going to be wiped out.
Absolutely. It is a disaster for them, you know, beyond all question.
And who's going to bail them out? Anybody?
Well, that's a very, very good question, because we're talking about a critical aspect of the human food supply, and our food supply is already stressed. We've had the Deepwater Horizon disaster in the Gulf of Mexico has toxified the seafood down there. Certainly out here in Hawaii, everybody's very, very wary of eating any seafood coming out of the Pacific because of Fukushima. We know that people are turning their backs on the GMO crops. Contrary to the advertising, the GMO crops are producing lower yields than the natural varieties. And all of a sudden, we're in a world where there isn't enough safe and healthy food for everybody to be eating right now. And then to just have this snowstorm come in and these ranchers be caught unprepared because the U.S. government is still screaming, global warming, global warming, you don't need to worry about snow. It is a disaster by any definition of the word.
What do you see on the horizon, Michael, as our most pressing issue as a population?
Our most pressing issue is we're just going to have to accept the reality that this current financial system and this government are heading for some kind of a collapse. We need to be ready to hunker down, ride out the confusion, and we need to decide for ourselves what kind of a nation we want to have in this land after the smoke is cleared. A good model to look at would be the collapse of the former Soviet Union. They went through it with an absolute minimum of bloodshed. There was about 3 months of confusion, then the new Russian republics started up. They did a lot of things right over there. They've got a booming economy, a huge trade surplus, and we should emulate some of what they did over there.
And they've got Putin for life.
And they've got Putin. Well, you know, Putin seems to be doing a really good job. He's acting like the only adult in the room internationally, certainly when it came to the attempt by the U.S. to launch a war into Syria.
Sure.
And a lot of people are saying he should have gotten Obama's Nobel Peace Prize.
I saw a video today that somebody sent me, and I don't know if it's real or not. Who knows, right? But it had the rebels killing a Christian in Syria on the streets, and they cut his head off in front of a crowd of little children and people cheering them on. And again, I don't know if it was real. I'm not even sure if the body was real. But if it was, Michael, those are the people that we've been supporting. Those are the people we've been giving the money to buy the arms and get the weapons to get Assad out, who, of course, is not a Boy Scout. My gosh. And neither was Saddam Hussein. Assad's biggest problem, because he had lived a relatively quiet regime, was when he attacked his own people when they were demonstrating. But, I mean, these animals that are out there, I'm getting real reports that people who are Christian in Syria, as a lot of my family members were, are being slaughtered by these rebels. Do you hear anything on that?
Oh, yes, all the time. We're seeing lots of pictures, lots of video. And you need to understand, these kinds of actions are completely inconsistent with a genuine popular revolution against Assad, which is how they're being portrayed in the American corporate media.
That's right.
But just to imagine back during the American Revolution, how far would George Washington and Thomas Jefferson have gotten if they were trying to eject the British by going into the colonial churches and schools and burning the place down and attacking people? Anybody trying to create a change in society must court public opinion and public support. You don't go out and commit acts that destroy your public support if you are actually representing the people. And these hired mercenaries who've come in, I think something like 95% of the Free Syria Army are not Syrian. They're coming in and using acts of terror to try and terrorize Assad's people into supporting them. It's not working, but every time they do it, it's a flashing neon sign that just advertises they are not really a popular revolution among the Syrian people. It's a covert attempt at an overthrow.
Well, with this video that I saw today, they have totally lost control over what's happening in Syria. If that's going on in the streets, where they just cut somebody's head off and the crowd is there cheering them on, and little kids, I mean, six-year-old kids, they're there watching while this guy holds this head up. And I mean, it's absolutely disgusting. Now, and I preface it, Michael, by saying if it was real, because I'm not sure it was. It could have been a great video hoax, but I'm hearing too many of these stories coming out of.
Well, there is a lot of hoaxing going on. We know that there was certainly a lot of hoaxing regarding the allegations of chemical weapons. And basically, you just have to evaluate each new piece of video or film or video or digital image, rather, on its merits. But a rule of thumb I tend to use, and I always tell my listeners and readers this, when you're looking at a piece of information coming out from the media or some government spokesman, it's best to look for what should be there and isn't, because generally that is going to let you know when what you're looking at is a fraud. And I'll give you a good example, of course. That was the claim by the U.S. government that Assad gassed his own Alawite supporters, women and children, virtually in front of the UN chemical weapons inspectors on the day they arrived. And what should be there and isn't is a motive for Assad to do something that stupid, because it gains no military objective was satisfied by such an attack, and it certainly didn't help him politically. And of course, pretty much the rest of the world, even the UN inspectors, are saying that, yeah, it was the rebels. Turkey arrested some of the hired mercenaries with sarin. They're starting to prosecute them. And that was pretty much the reason that whole cause for war fell apart. And again, because of the lies about Saddam's nuclear weapons, the American people are now skeptical. They're looking for reasons not to believe the official story. And once they start thinking about it and looking deeply, they find reasons that they shouldn't be trusting the official story.
We're coming back next hour. I'm going to talk about comparing 2008 with now, and we'll get into how it affects all of us next.